If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. Newton Media Group, a family of creative services, presents the Voice Over Work podcast. On the podcast today, we take a little deeper look into a book introduced in a previous podcast with a chapter-by-chapter look at
the science of high performance, developmental toughness, boost willpower, master new skills, and achieve your goals faster. Written by Sam Bathla. Narrated by Russell Newton. Chapter 1. What is high performance? Don't lower your expectations to meet your performance. Raise your level of performance to meet your expectations. Ralph Marston. It was not just a regular day at the office for Jenny. She would finally get to know her performance appraisal results along with other colleagues. Therefore, she was a bit nervous. She was frequently looking at her watch and then towards the cabin of her marketing head. The marketing department she worked in was buzzing more than usual. Jenny noticed people going in and out of her boss's office. Each colleague was spending 15 to 20 minutes in there. A few people came out looking cheerful, while others didn't seem that happy, and few seemed frustrated. Her heart started beating faster, as it was her turn now. She was about to enter that corner room in the next 10 minutes. We want and keep longing for things in life, but when those moments arrive, we get nervous and full of anxiety. Jenny was experiencing similar thoughts and emotions. Finally, she was called in. Her reporting manager, a tall, handsome man in his early 40s, sat along with a young HR representative from the organization. Jenny took her seat, and after just initial greetings, the discussion on appraisal and feedback started. She started realizing her anxiety and fears were not unfounded. She got the feedback that her performance was not up to the mark, and the organization desired her to gear up faster, strengthen her competencies and skill set to address her job requirements better. Finally, she received a letter that offered an average 3-star performance rating, 5 stars being the top performance, with a marginal salary hike. Deeply sad and frustrated, she came out of the room and managed to reach at her desk. Sitting at her desk, she started to realize what had happened. She thought about all her colleagues who came out looking happy. Then she thought of Zara. Zara was one of the smartest young women in her marketing team, and she had come out of the room with a big, victorious smile on her face. In the next few minutes, Jenny was at Zara's workstation inquiring how Zara's performance was rated by the company. Zara told her about her wonderful performance appraisal with a promotion to the next level and a decent pay hike. After this brief talk with Zara and somehow managing her work during the day, she left early. Sitting at home, Jenny tried to understand what had led to her bad performance rating. She was equally thoughtful and curious to recollect past instances about Zara's stupendous performance. Jenny also recalled that Zara always had enjoyed more freedom in her work because she had always delivered great results. She was quite independent in her approach of dealing with the organization's clients and meetings. She enjoyed a great amount of flexibility to accommodate her meeting schedule with clients. Though Zara seemed to be consistently given more work responsibilities, she never appeared stressed or worried about her work. Now Jenny started to introspect on her own working life. She realized that she was mostly anxious about work and what her superiors were going to think about her. She was swamped with work, despite having had much less work than Zara. Further, she was almost always the last one to leave the office every day. Jenny was puzzled and curious to know what made Zara deliver such amazing results despite more work under her belt? What made Zara work seemingly without any stress? Are there any special traits she had acquired from her parents, or had she learned the formidable qualities by practice? Chapter 2. How the Science of High Performance Works for Everyone. We must believe that we are gifted for something and that this thing, at whatever cost, must be attained. Marie Curie. You might have heard people raving about someone, saying that he or she is gifted with some talent. A vast majority of people still think that all the high achievers have attained such abilities naturally. With that thought and reasoning, they rule out the possibilities of performing at those levels and achieving that kind of success. What happens next? This majority doesn't try something new or different, relying on their false beliefs. The reason they attribute for not trying is that a few selected people are gifted, but they are not. So why make an effort and waste time in that area? But if you ever try to explore further about the lives of those high achievers, who you think have succeeded because they had natural abilities or gifts, you'll be surprised to know that most of these people have spent significant parts of their lives developing their competencies and skills. Such people have dedicated themselves to intensive training that drives changes in the brain and, sometimes depending on the ability, in the body, that make it possible for them to do things that they otherwise wouldn't have been able to do. Of course, it is not possible to change everything if that relates to some genetic constraints. You cannot expect a 5-foot person to master the game of basketball, as you would obviously be at a disadvantage while contesting against taller players. Similarly, you cannot expect a super tall woman to be able to comfortably master the game of gymnastics. But barring those genetic constraints, for the most part, the human body and mind can be very well stated as a normalizing machine. If you expose human beings to a different set of environments or circumstances, they have some initial resistance, but over a period of time, the new environment starts appearing normal. Our mind tends to get normalized to the new environment. Let's understand this with the help of an example. Assume you are an overweight person. If you start going to the gym for an hour a day every morning or evening, you will see and meet people who are physically fit and have optimal weight. Initially, you may be reluctant to run the treadmill or pick up the weight, but over time, you start getting acclimatized with the new environment. Now, if you continue in that environment for some time, you will start getting inspired by the healthy and fit people around you. Suddenly, losing weight, which seemed a difficult task earlier, now seems to be within reach, thanks to your exposure to the new environment. This concept of normalization of human beings is one of the most important features of human ability. Once you are convinced about this feature, you would not simply rule out the door of any possibility for you by naming it as luck or inborn talent. What are the scientific principles beneath this innate human capacity of adaptation? Precisely, the principles of homeostasis and neuroplasticity are responsible for this human adaptability. Let's understand these principles one by one. Homeostasis. Our bodies can adapt to anything. Homeostasis is a key concept in understanding how our body works. It is formed with two Greek words, homeo meaning similar, and stasis meaning stable. A more formal definition of homeostasis is a characteristic of a system that regulates its internal environment and tends to maintain a stable, relatively constant condition of properties. Homeostasis means a system's tendency to do what it needs to do to maintain stability. Chapter 3. Self-image controls your performance and how to recalibrate it. A strong, positive self-image is the best possible preparation for success in life. Dr. Joyce Brothers. In the previous section, you learned about the adaptability of the human body and brain by the principles of homeostasis and neuroplasticity. Once you understand that you don't have any limits, rather you limit yourself by the false limits created by you and only you, it gives you a sense of liberation. One more point before we get into learning the specific scientific principles and strategies towards high performance. Here, I would like you to spend some time to learn something about your self-image, because our self-image plays a vital role in how we approach towards any activity. So, the question arises is, how does self-image affect our performance? And can we change our self-image to improve our performance? Let's get straight into that. There is a broader term known as self-concept, and one of the subsets of that is self-image. Carl Rogers, an American psychologist, believes that the self-concept has three different components: the view you have of yourself, self-image; how much value you place on yourself, self-esteem or self-worth; what you wish you were really like, ideal self. Here, we will talk only about self-image. The broad idea about self-image in relation to our discussions on high performance is that your level of performance will be limited to the level you see yourself as capable of. You would never perform beyond what you see yourself. Jason Selk, one of the premier performance coaches in the United States, defines self-image as below. Self-image is essentially how you view yourself, what strengths and weaknesses you believe you possess, and what you believe you are capable of achieving. Jason compares your self-image to a thermostat and explains how your performance can never exceed the self-image you have set for yourself. In one of his books, he states, "Essentially, the self-image governs how successful any individual becomes because it motivates and shapes work ethic and effort. In this way, self-image is like a thermostat. If you set the thermostat at 72 degrees Fahrenheit and the room drops to 71 degrees, the thermostat then sends a message to the heater to get to work. Warm air rushes into the room, and the room warms up to 72 degrees. When the room reaches 73 degrees, the thermostat tells the heater to stop working. All day long, the thermostat governs the temperature in the room and won't allow the room temperature to rise or drop from the desired temperature for long. Human beings are the same way. We neither outperform nor underperform our self-image for long. That's why it is so important to set your self-image gauge high enough to achieve your life goals. Set your self-image gauge to low, and by definition, you'll underachieve, because your mind won't call for the motivation to achieve more. Therefore, it becomes even more important to first take a close look at how we see ourselves. Once we are able to see ourselves as capable to do a particular task, then our action will be aligned with our identity. Someone rightly stated once, "Your identity precedes activity." How to ascertain your self-image? If you have some difficulty... Chapter 4, Mind Training Techniques to Develop Mental Toughness. You have to train your brain to be positive, just like you work out your body. Sean Aker. If you're not aware, it is important to make a note that our brains are wired psychologically to be negativity biased. Negativity bias implies a behavior that, despite carrying equal intensity, things of a more negative nature, e.g., unpleasant thoughts, emotions, or social interactions, harmful or traumatic events, have a greater effect on one's psychological state and processes as compared to neutral or positive things. In other words, something positive will generally have less of an impact on a person's behavior and cognition than something equally emotional but negative. What this means for us is, if we don't voluntarily control our thoughts and emotions, these tiny, invisible creatures carry a huge power to ruin our mental state, thus generating a negative behavior resulting in non-performance or performance at a low or below average level. But don't come to any conclusions immediately, because the best part is that humans are gifted with consciousness, unlike other animals. We have the power to exercise control on our thoughts, though most people rarely do anything to change the direction of their thoughts. They think that they have no choice but to float with whatever thought that comes to their head. Only a very small percentage of the population who are growth-oriented and are sincere about performing to their best potential choose to control their thoughts. In this section, you will learn about a few mental shifts or let's call it transforming your thinking patterns, that will help you to overcome your negativity bias to a large extent, if you put sincere efforts into training your mind. Why I call them mental shifts and not merely changes is because a shift means a major transformation and not some minor tweak or modification. These mental shifts, backed by studies and experiments by psychology researchers, have the potential to rewire your thinking patterns, which leads to the right set of emotions. And guess what happens? You will start getting amazing results now. So let's get straight into these techniques to develop your mental toughness. Take stress as a challenge, not a threat. There is no denying that most people view stress as a threat. They think stress is something they should avoid, but that's not the way high performers look at stress. All successful people who perform at a high level look at stress as a challenge. Try to imagine any successful person in your head, and you will reconfirm yourself the accuracy of the above statement. High achievers don't get threatened, rather, they feel challenged. Hans Selye, an Austrian endocrinologist, who is known for important scientific work on the hypothetical, non-specific response of an organism to stressors and the effects of stress on the human body, coined a term, eustress. This term consists of the Greek prefix eu, that means good. Therefore, eustress means a good or beneficial stress. If you start to observe your stress as a challenge, then you're giving it the form of eustress. Researchers call this response a challenge response, which is characterized by viewing stress as something positive, and therefore it becomes a growth stimulus. In the midst of stress, people who demonstrate the challenge response do focus proactively. Chapter 5. Proven principles to acquire any new skill faster. Acquire knowledge. Acquire skills. They weigh nothing, and you can carry them with you all your life. Ruskin Bond. Your drive to perform at your highest level would require you to continuously learn new skills. It is because always performing at the highest level means you need to evolve and unleash your true inner potential, which requires lifetime learning of most effective ways to deliver the result faster. Thankfully, we are now aware of proven concepts of homeostasis and neuroplasticity that almost assure you that you can reach any levels of growth if you truly desire, barring a few genetic limitations. Now, you can ask your inner critic to shut up whining about your false limits that got imprinted on your mind due to social conditioning of the past. You know very well now that our body is adaptable to anything, and our mind is malleable and can be molded to change to any extent we want. These laws give you an understanding and assurance that you can become an altogether different person, which you had always wanted to become, regardless of location, religion, color, caste, gender, and you can reach to any heights as you may desire. Though it might sound repetitive, but I am intentionally choosing to do so. It is because most people are wired to think their abilities and skill sets are limited, or they're unable to learn something after a certain age. To break those myths and to rewire such mindsets, it becomes necessary to reemphasize because, as is rightly said below, by this highly successful personality, repetition is the mother of learning, the father of action, which makes it the architect of accomplishment. Zig Ziglar. Therefore, these principles are worth engraving as a tattoo on your brain, as these are so important to rewire your belief system about the limitlessness of human potential. Okay, now with a deeper clarity on the above principles, we now move to the nuts and bolts, or how-to aspects. We'll talk about a few strategies or techniques that will help you to learn new skills at a faster pace and without getting burned out. This section of the book is all about developing and mastering any skills. Now, let's look at these strategies. The principle of stress and recovery. When I go to my gym, I see a poster of Muhammad Ali with the inspiring quote, I don't count my sit-ups. I only start counting when it starts hurting, because they're the only ones that count. This would also remind you of the famous saying, no pain, no gain. You have to expose yourself to a level of stress in any area if you want to grow in that field. If you wish to build up your biceps or want to see yourself enjoying at beaches with your solid six-pack abdomen, or if not that, a fitter body even, you know that it takes work. It doesn't happen with only normal body movement. You have to stress the muscles which you want to grow. This principle applies everywhere. If you want to acquire a mental skill or improve your thinking, you have to stretch your mind beyond the normal. Everyone knows, but this is half of the principle of gaining any physical muscle or mastering any skill. It is not that you would continuously stress or stretch yourself. The other half of the principle is recovery. In sports and every other area of life, the principle of growth remains the same. A fair combination. Chapter 6. The Science of Expertise. How highly successful attain mastery. Mastery is not a function of genius or talent. It is a function of time and intense focus applied to a particular field of knowledge. Robert Greene. Everyone has heard the age-old saying, practice makes a man perfect. But sadly, this is not entirely true. You might think that the more experience you have doing something, the better you get. But that's not true. You don't become a better driver by driving more or for a longer period. You don't become a better doctor by just being a doctor for several years. You don't become a better accountant or a lawyer just by being that. It's like someone claiming 20 years of experience in a field, but in reality, it could be 1 year of experience just repeated over 20 years. Without learning anything new in that time. Therefore, practicing the same things over and over without focus on improving your craft doesn't make you any better. Forget becoming perfect. Hence, the improved version of this quote should be, "Perfect practice makes a man perfect." You get better not merely by practicing something, but by practicing it the right way. This section is about teaching what should be the right way to practice. Anders Ericsson is a psychologist and researcher at Florida State University. He was the original researcher on the famous 10,000-hour rule, which was promoted by Malcolm Gladwell in his famous book, Outliers, as the necessary time period needed to become an expert in any field. Ericsson explains that there are three types of practices which people pursue to gain any skill in any field, as stated below. Naive practice, purposeful practice, deliberate practice. Let's look at each of these one by one and learn why Ericsson emphasizes that only deliberate practice is the way to attaining the status of expert or master of any particular field. Naive practice means a generic kind of mindless practice where you simply keep on doing what you had learned earlier. It's like always being in the performance zone and just taking actions only based on your existing knowledge and skill set without any focus or intention of improvement. This type of practice of doing the same thing repeatedly and expecting that it will improve does not work at all. Rather, this was termed as insanity by the famous Albert Einstein. The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. It is like playing guitar from your college days till your 40s without deliberately learning the best ways to press the right notes and strings and expecting that the 20 years of practice will make you a better guitarist. You don't get the exact benefit of the feature of adaptability of human body and mind by repeating the same thing mindlessly over and over again. Then, what makes the difference? For this, let's first look at other two types of practices. Purposeful practice. This is a better way to practice and learn a skill faster as compared to naive practice, but still a level below the deliberate practice. Here are the features of a purposeful practice. Purposeful practice has well-defined and specified goals. Take the example of any sports training or learning any new language or playing any musical instrument within a particular time frame. Here you have a clear objective to learn a skill in a particular time frame. purposeful practice is focused. This kind of practice is not like planning a casual trip to your grocery store. Chapter 7. Key tenets to activate high performance in your everyday life. Successful people do what unsuccessful people are not willing to do. Jeff Olson. A good life is nothing but a combination of intentionally well-lived days in a row for longer periods of time. If we take care of our days, we don't need to worry about our future, and it will make our past beautiful. A well-planned and well-lived day will build on the strong foundation for a better tomorrow. And when you look back at such days in a row, you will feel great about your past, too. Robin Sharma once rightly said, "Small daily improvements over time lead to stunning results." Since we are on this journey to perform at our highest level, the first requirement is to become intentional to plan our days and imbibe the self-discipline to overcome our inner resistances. You need to keep your cravings for instant gratification at bay and focus on the activities that will make you closer to your goals. This section explains a few strategies that will help you take charge of your everyday actions. Let's look at these strategies now. Apply WIN formula to control your moment-to-moment decisions. What is this WIN formula? This is the strategy that highly successful use to take their moment-to-moment decisions that enables them to craft their best days and thus achieve results. WIN stands for What's Important Now. This acronym was used by Bob Bowman, coach to the legend Michael Phelps, an American swimmer and one of the most prized Olympic athletes in the history. In his book, No Limits, The Will to Succeed, Michael Phelps explains the secrets behind all his legendary performances and winning of Olympic medals, including his coach's Bob Bowman strategies. There is a mention in the book where coach Bob Bowman explains what separates Michael from all other swimmers. Bowman states that if other swimmers don't feel good, they don't swim good. But this was not the case with Michael. He performs regardless of what he feels, as he has trained his mind with his practice for a long period. Michael shows that high performers don't let their feelings come in the way of their actions. If something is to be done as a priority, then they perform at their best, despite whatever they feel about that activity. Their feelings are not important, rather, the action towards the goal is important. Anyone can conclude that if you have strong self-control and can control your emotions effectively, then no one can stop you from taking action towards your goals. It wouldn't be incorrect to say that on most occasions, it is rather our inner critic mind that interrupts in our performance and not the outside circumstances. Michael's criterion for making a decision at any given moment is simple, what's important now, and not how do I feel now. Ultimately, it is this WIN formula that triggers him to take massive action towards his goals, and with strong self-discipline on his feelings, he is able to master his game. Just feel yourself the conviction in the words of Michael Phelps when he says, "It's true, when it comes down to it, when the time comes to focus and be mentally prepared, I can do whatever it takes to get there in any situation." There is no ambiguity, no second thought in his mind. It's just a solid decision. Life becomes quite easy when you master such kind of self-discipline in your life. On the similar lines of WIN formula, Eric Greitens, a former Navy SEAL officer. Chapter 8. Scientific ways to boost your willpower for sustained performance. Willpower and desire, when properly combined, make an irresistible pair. Napoleon Hill. Willpower is one of the key elements that ensure that you achieve the state of high performance. We learned in the previous sections that it is only the deliberate practice that leads to mastery, and also one needs to put massive action into the pursuit, regardless of what one feels about it. You would agree that deliberate practice towards learning and putting consistent and massive actions requires you to control your urges to check your next social media notification, not getting swayed away easily by some outside distraction or other people around you. In short, The deliberate practice and consistent and massive actions that lead you to perform at your best, which requires willpower. Roy Baumeister, a psychologist at Florida State University, describes three necessary components for achieving your goals. First, you need to establish the motivation for change and set a clear goal. Second, you need to monitor your behavior toward that goal. The third component is willpower. Whether your goal is to lose weight, kick a smoking habit, study more, or spend less time on Facebook, willpower is a critical step to achieving that outcome. Let's start with a simple definition of what is willpower. Willpower is our ability to control and resist our short-term temptations to enable us to achieve our longer-term goals. It is also known as determination, self-control, drive, or self-discipline. In terms of psychology, as many researchers in the field have defined it, willpower can be stated as the ability to delay gratification, resisting short-term temptations to meet long-term goals. The capacity to override an unwanted thought, feeling, or impulse. The ability to employ a cool cognitive system of behavior rather than a hot emotional system. Conscious, effortful regulation of the self by the self. With the above definition, it's now evident that willpower is the force that can keep us glued to the actions that are important to achieve our long-term goals. As goals take a long time, our internal desires to enjoy instant gratification often drift us from our path, and that's where willpower helps us keep doing and delivering the highest level of performance. In this section, we will talk about how one can develop willpower that enables one to take massive actions towards the goals. Let's look at some of the best ways to improve your willpower. Meditation significantly improves willpower. Whether it is East or West, you would agree that nowadays, meditation is not something that one considers only as a religious or spiritual activity. Rather, it is benefits for the general well-being and improved functionality are well recognized by neuroscience already. It is not any mystical ritual. Rather, it has become part of a daily routine of many high achievers who start their day with some kind of mindfulness practice. Tim Ferriss, a best-selling author who has also interviewed more than 200 high achievers in the fields of sports, business, entertainment, confirms that more than 90% of these high achiever interviewees have instilled a daily habit of some kind of meditation, even if it is for a few minutes a day. If you are new to this seemingly mystical word, meditation, let's briefly understand about meditation. Chapter 9, the neuroscience of peak performance or flow state and how you can experience it. The happiest people spend much time in a state of flow, the state in which people are so involved in an activity that nothing else seems to matter. The experience itself is so enjoyable that people will do it even at great cost for the sheer sake of doing it. Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi. You must have heard about other people, and probably you yourself might have had an experienced a state of mind when you were in a flow. That generally happens when you are engaged in something that you are passionate about. Different names are given to this state of consciousness, like runner's high, being in the zone, or peak performance. To define, flow is the term used by researchers to indicate the optimal state of consciousness, those highest moments of total absorption by the activity we are into, in such a way that we lose our own sense of existence. In such states, time seems to fly, and the performance of such person goes through the roof. The flow state has been described by the world's greatest thinkers as the most productive and creative state of mind, in which work doesn't remain work anymore, rather, it becomes a joy. I see this as a state where there remains no difference between the doer and the doing. For instance, if a dancer is in the state of flow while dancing, she forgets any difference between herself and dance. The dancer becomes the dance. It is a situation of complete immersion in the activity, where your entire focus is on the activity and you become insulated from any kind of distraction. You will know the scientific rationale about this in a bit. The above experiences might seem mystical or philosophical to few people, and flow obviously doesn't sound to be a sober scientific topic to be explored. Still, there have been few people who were curious to explore about this concept of flow, to understand the science behind this and how does it feel when someone experienced the state of being. And Hungarian psychologist Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi was one such person who embarked upon this journey to dig deeper into the state of being that generates the highest levels of performance by an individual. He recognized and named this psychological concept for this heightened state of consciousness as flow. Csikszentmihalyi researched a large number of people to understand the state of flow and how it felt when someone experienced such a state. In one of his talks, he described that based on his studies and interviews of more than 8,000 people around the world, from Dominican monks to blind nuns to Himalayan climbers to Navajo shepherds who enjoy their work, regardless of the culture, regardless of education or whatever, he found that below are the seven conditions that are present when a person is in the state of flow. They are completely involved in what we are doing, focused and concentrated. A sense of ecstasy, of being outside everyday reality. Greater inner clarity, knowing what needs to be done and how well we are doing. Knowing that the activity is doable, that our skills are adequate to the task. A sense of serenity, no worries about oneself, and a feeling of growing beyond the boundaries of the age. Timelessness, thoroughly focused on the present. Hours seem to pass by in minutes. Intrinsic motivation. Whatever produces flow becomes its own rewards. If you can relate to it and even imagine such scenario, this is definitely a state of ultimate joy. This has been The Science of High Performance. Develop mental toughness, boost willpower, master new skills, and achieve your goals faster. Written by Saum Bothla. Narrated by Russell Newton. Copyright 2018 by Saum Bothla. Production copyright by Saum Bothla. Chapter 1. What is high performance? Don't lower your expectations to meet your performance. Raise your level of performance to meet your expectations. Ralph Marston. It was not just a regular day at the office for Jenny. She would finally get to know her performance appraisal results along with other colleagues. Therefore, she was a bit nervous. She was frequently looking at her watch and then towards the cabin of her marketing head. The marketing department she worked in was buzzing more than usual. Jenny noticed people going in and out of her boss's office. Each colleague was spending 15 to 20 minutes in there. A few people came out looking cheerful, while others didn't seem that happy, and few seemed frustrated. Her heart started beating faster, as it was her turn now. She was about to enter that corner room in the next 10 minutes. We want and keep longing for things in life, but when those moments arrive, we get nervous and full of anxiety. Jenny was experiencing similar thoughts and emotions. Finally, she was called in. Her reporting manager, a tall, handsome man in his early 40s, sat along with a young HR representative from the organization. Jenny took her seat, and after just initial greetings, the discussion on appraisal and feedback started. She started realizing her anxiety and fears were not unfounded. She got the feedback that her performance was not up to the mark, and the organization desired her to gear up faster, strengthen her competencies and skill set to address her job requirements better. Finally, she received a letter that offered an average 3-star performance rating, 5 stars being the top performance, with a marginal salary hike. Deeply sad and frustrated, she came out of the room and managed to reach at her desk. Sitting at her desk, she started to realize what had happened. She thought about all her colleagues who came out looking happy. Then she thought of Zara. Zara was one of the smartest young women in her marketing team, and she had come out of the room with a big, victorious smile on her face. In the next few minutes, Jenny was at Zara's workstation inquiring how Zara's performance was rated by the company. Zara told her about her wonderful performance appraisal with a promotion to the next level and a decent pay hike. After this brief talk with Zara and somehow managing her work during the day, she left early. Sitting at home, Jenny tried to understand what had led to her bad performance rating. She was equally thoughtful and curious to recollect past instances about Zara's stupendous performance. Jenny also recalled that Zara always had enjoyed more freedom in her work because she had always delivered great results. She was quite independent in her approach of dealing with the organization's clients and meetings. She enjoyed a great amount of flexibility to accommodate her meeting schedule with clients. Though Zara seemed to be consistently given more work responsibilities, she never appeared stressed or worried about her work. Now Jenny started to introspect on her own working life. She realized that she was mostly anxious about work and what her superiors were going to think about her. She was swamped with work, despite having had much less work than Zara. Further, she was almost always the last one to leave the office every day. Jenny was puzzled and curious to know, what made Zara deliver such amazing results despite more work under her belt? What made Zara work seemingly without any stress? Are there any special traits she had acquired from her parents, or had she learned the formidable qualities by practice? Amazon.com has more information regarding the author and this book.
With an eclectic collection of water cooler knowledge, inspirational stories, and motivational thoughts from some of the newest audiobooks on the market, this has been the Voice Overwork Podcast, brought to you by Newton Media Group, a family of creative services.